So, I find the ending of the Gospel of John here kind of weird. I only find it kind of weird because it's a weird little passage here at the very end where John takes a moment to defend a rumor about himself. Remember, the whole Gospel of John was written to address the heretical teachings of Gnosticism. And we're not going to get into the whole, you know, teaching on Gnosticism. I'm not going to go down there to remind you what Gnosticism is, but the heretical teachings of Gnosticism were creeping into the church. It was a huge problem at the time of John. And so the whole Gospel of John was written to address Gnosticism. And the Gnosticism, basically, if you want to just put it into a little sentence or two, is this false idea that Jesus wasn't God and he wasn't flesh, that he was spirit. Okay, so, and the Gnostics believed that matter or material things were inherently evil, right? But spiritual things were good. So they figured that since Jesus is a good person, he must be spirit. He can't be flesh, blood, and bones. He must have been a spirit or a phantom or whatever. He can't be a real man. He can't be in that sense. Otherwise, he would be evil. That was their thinking, right? So this heretical teaching had gotten into the church. And so John, when he wrote the gospel, his gospel, the last of the gospels to be written, he wrote it with this to combat this idea. Okay, you don't believe that Jesus is God. You don't believe that Jesus was fully human. You don't believe Jesus was man. I'm going to show you that he was. And so when you go through the gospel of John, as we've been going through it now since June of last year, I think it was. So it's taken us like a year and a half to get through to John. We've seen all the seven miracles and the seven I am statements, and it's actually kind of more than that. But every chapter almost touches on the thought on Jesus's deity and on the fact that he is God. And it's right out there. It's easy to read. It's easy to understand when you understand the context of what you're reading. Right? And of what Jesus is saying, because, you know, we've been over this. People will say, Jesus never said he was God. Well, if Jesus never said he was God, why did they all pick up stones and want to kill him on the spot? Well, they did it because they believed that he was a heretic and blasphemous with his teaching because he made himself out to be God. It says that right in the Gospel of John. So the whole idea of the Gospel of John is to basically cut down this false teaching, this Gnosticism that was in the church. And the whole theme of the Gospel of John was at the end of last chapter. It's verse 30, it says, in chapter 20, it says, now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written, referring to everything that we've read, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So the whole purpose of the Gospel of John is that you will believe that Jesus is God, and you'll give your life to Jesus and have life in his name. So the emphasis of the Gospel of John is the deity of Christ and the fact that Jesus is God. And now here at the very last part, after writing basically a whole gospel to speak against Gnosticism and to address these false teachings, John throws in a really quick little thing where he's addressing a rumor about him, about himself. Right? And so what's the rumor? Well, the rumor is exactly what it says it is that we just read, right? So it says in verse 23, so the saying spread abroad among the brothers that the disciple, that would be John, was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to John that he was not to die, but he said, if it is my will that he, John, remain until I come, what is that to you? So this conversation that you're having here, it's a conversation actually between Peter and Jesus, and John's not actually in on the conversation. He's just actually following Peter. But if you remember when the Gospel of John was written, which is somewhere around 90 AD, and if this is taking place somewhere around 30-ish AD, we're having a 60 years, let's just say 60 years time frame between from when Jesus said this to when John's addressing the rumor. So for like 60 years, there's this rumor been going around that John is going to live forever. John's not going to die. Okay? And so John is addressing this rumor, and a lot of people get confused by this conversation because they're like, well, what is Peter asking exactly? What is Peter worried about? When Peter looks behind him and sees John following them, what's he worried about? Why did Jesus answer in this way? Was Jesus just being glib? Was he being facetious? Right? Was he just like in a sense, saying, Peter, shut up, right? Because we know Peter often gets rebuked for a lot of what he says. So is he just telling Peter, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, Peter, why John's following us. What matters is that you follow me, right? So, or was Jesus actually being literal, right? In what he said. Well, John here is saying that Jesus wasn't being literal, literal at least not in the way that everyone understood it, right? That Jesus, that it was Jesus's will that John will remain until Jesus came. Now, mind you, that Jesus gave no context for the statement. We don't see anything about Jesus ever trying to explain the statement to anybody. We don't have any conversation recorded where people are like, well, what, when you said that about John, what exactly did you mean by that? Are you saying that John's going to live forever until you return? Because they did understand the fact that Jesus was going to return. Jesus had told them that he was going to come back for them. So there, we don't have any conversation recorded like that. So there's no context for this statement. Jesus never explained it to anyone. But they took it to mean that John was going to live forever, that John would live until Jesus was to return. He had already told them, you can go, you know, throughout the Gospel of John, I'm going to go to a place where you can't follow me. And they had this conversation with Jesus. Well, you know, and he's like, and you know how to get there. And they're like, what are you talking about? We don't even know where you're going. How are we supposed to know how to get there? And then it was even Peter, Jesus had in John 13, who had a discussion with Jesus and was like, why can't I follow you? Right? Why can't, where are you going that I can't follow you? Because Peter wanted to follow him, obviously. But that leads to that whole conversation. Also, it continues in John 14, where Jesus tells them, let not your hearts be troubled. He knew this was bothering him. Right? So he says, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? So he'd already told him, I'm going to go prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and I will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. So they knew this. They knew this. They may not have understood it fully. You know, they couldn't comprehend necessarily what Jesus was discussing with them. But this whole conversation that you see in John 13 and 14 and et cetera is what we're talking about. Everyone assumes that Jesus is saying that John is going to live physically until Jesus returns to take them to himself, to his Father's house. That's what they think. For like 60 years, people have been spreading this rumor about John. And John says that's not what Jesus meant. I mean, we know that John dies. He dies in less than 10 years from when he wrote this gospel. It could be a little longer. But that's what started the rumor. Now, there's a couple of things about this that I want to point out that I find somewhat interesting slash humorous. Because there's a fine line between the interesting and the slash humorous here as far as what Jesus said and how John's life actually turned out. And the first thing is that John lived the longest of all the disciples. Right, the first disciple to be martyred or die was James, John's brother. You see that in Acts chapter 12. He was killed at the hand of Herod Agrippa. Peter, who's the one who brings up the whole question, he's also dead at this time, the time John's actually writing the gospel. Right, he died a martyr's death. Legend had it he dies in Rome, crucified upside down, sometimes around 64 or 67 AD, so like maybe even 25, 30 years before John even wrote this. Peter was already dead. He died under the persecution of Nero. John, like I said, John wrote this gospel in somewhere around 90 AD. And yes, I understand years and timelines are hard to pin down exactly when we're trying to figure out exactly when these letters and gospels were written and when they died and when they lived and what happened, etc. But basically, at the time that he wrote the gospel, the majority, if not all, of the original disciples had died or had been martyred. Right? So he wrote it having outlived the rest of the disciples. And so he's addressing this rumor about the fact that he's going to live forever when he's already lived longer than all the other disciples that originally first heard it. And you have to think that while John's writing this down, this is how my brain thinks, you have to think that while he's writing this down, you know, John died around 98 AD, so he's writing this maybe, you know, like I said, less than 10 years before he passes away. But you have to think about when he's penning this gospel, and I'm going to address this rumor really quick at the end of the gospel. Jesus did not say, I was going to live forever. until I see him again, right? And then he thinks, well, I am the last one. All the other disciples have died. Who am I writing this letter to, right, to tell them that that's not what Jesus meant when I've outlived them all? I wonder if Jesus actually did mean that, right? I wonder if I am going to live for it. No, that's not what he meant, right? So I kind of humorous that he's lived longer than everyone when he's writing this saying, no, that's not what Jesus meant. But here's the second thing. See, the truth is that John actually lived to see Jesus. Like I said, Jesus gives no context when he says this comment. He says, if it is my will that he, John, remain until I come, what is that to you? He's telling that to Peter. We think that Jesus is just being glib or facetious or whatever, trying to, like, Peter, that's not the important thing. We'll get more into what they're actually discussing in just a second. But the truth is, John did live until Jesus came, because that happened on the island of Patmos. Right? In John's life, about 5 or 6 years after he penned the gospel, he's exiled to the Isle of Patmos, which is a little small Greek island in the Aegean Sea just off the west coast of Turkey. Right? It was a Roman penal colony. He was banished there by Domitian, Caesar Domitian, whatever his whole full name is. It's really long. Right? And who was the Roman emperor at the time. He had had John boiled alive first, and that didn't kill him. At that point, if I was John, I'd be like, well, maybe, maybe Jesus is, maybe I am going to live forever. I don't know. They tried to boil me. That didn't work. But they banish him to the Patmos. So he's sent to this prison island of Patmos, and that's where he receives the revelation of Jesus Christ, right? The book we just referred to as Revelations. And it started in chapter 1 with a visit from who? From Jesus himself, right? Revelation chapter 1, verses 10 through 16. John says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet saying, write what you see in a book and send it to the seven churches. Right? And then he lists the seven churches. And he says, and I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me. And on turning, I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands, one like the Son of Man, Jesus' favorite phrase for himself, which relates back to Daniel, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash around his chest. The hairs of his head were white, like white wool, like snow. His eyes were like flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze, refined in a furnace. And his voice was like the roar of many waters. And in his right hand, he held seven stars. And from his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword. And his face was like the sun shining in full strength. And then he writes, well, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. But Jesus laid his right hand on him, saying, fear not, I am the first and the last and the living one. I died, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and Hades. So John did live until Jesus came. And so when Jesus says, what is it to you, Peter, that John should remain until I come? Jesus wasn't just making up something. He already knew something that Peter didn't understand. John did live till Jesus came. It wasn't the second coming or whatever they were thinking about when he comes. You know, it's not the rapture when he comes back from the church. It's none of those ideas. But he did see Jesus before he passed away. Jesus did come to him and gave him the vision, which turned out to be the book of Revelation. He lives for a couple more years after that, after he gets off the island, because Domitian gets executed or assassinated or whatever happened, and John gets set free and he goes back to Ephesus. John did live to see Jesus again. So maybe that's what Jesus was referring to. I don't know. I like it. Right? What I do know is this. So let's talk about what I really do know. When Jesus says, if it is my will that he, John, should remain until I come, what is it to you, Peter? You follow me. The important part of that sentence that you should pay attention to is the what is it to you? You follow me. That's the important part that you should be paying attention to. That's the part that we really need to take to heart. The rest of it, we could, you know, just fun theological coffee talk. We could spend hours talking about what Jesus meant by that statement and whether or not that was fulfilled or not when he appeared to John on the island of Patmos. It has its place. But for us this morning anyway, what we're going to focus on this section is the end part of what Jesus said. What is that to you? You follow me. So we have to understand what's being asked and what Peter is talking about. A lot of people spin this passage and they'll say, well, Peter's trying to compare himself to John somehow. Right? There's this comparison going on. Now, we know John was the disciple whom Jesus loved. That's how John refers to himself throughout his entire gospel. Never calls himself by name, always sort of refers himself into third person. And he had just gone through this whole restoration. Jesus had just gone through this whole restoration process with Peter, asking him, you know, did he love him? Feed my sheep, tend to my sheep. And then he says this very interesting statement to Peter in verse 18. Right? He says, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. Right? And that's important. Do not want to go. And then he says, Peter, follow me. Right after he says that. And John, when he's writing this, you know, through the Holy Spirit, interjects this that says that Jesus said this to Peter to show by what kind of death Peter was to have, basically, and how it was going to glorify God. So just what you want to hear from Jesus, right? When you're discussing with him, let me tell you how you're going to die and how it's going to glorify me. Can we skip that part, Jesus? Right? I don't really want to know. But this is what Jesus told Peter. It was about Peter's death, basically. So, is Peter comparing himself in some way to John? Is there some sort of rivalry here? I mean, when Peter looks back and Jesus says, follow me, and Peter's following Jesus, and they start walking off, and Peter looks behind him, right? And he sees John. Is there some sort of rivalry here between Peter and John? And is Peter like, why is John following us too? You know how when you're going to go somewhere with your kids and you're taking one kid with you and you're leaving the other kids at home, right, sometimes they'll be like, wait, you're only taking one? I want to go too. It's like, no, just us, right? Just us. You guys got to stay home. We don't want to stay home. Right? And there's that. And then if you say, okay, fine, well, you can come. Then the one you were going to take by themselves was like, what? You're bringing others? I thought it was just going to be me. Right? There's a whole rivalry thing going on. So is there a rivalry thing? I mean, a lot of people will swing it that way. And maybe Peter was like, why is John following us? I thought it was just you and me, Jesus. I thought it was just you and me. And Jesus is like, shut up, Peter. Right? Just follow me. Don't worry about John. Right? I've had this conversation many times, right? Don't worry about what they're doing. Only do what please do what I asked you to do. Don't worry about the others, right? Maybe it's that. I don't know. Maybe that's the root of what's being talked about. Peter is comparing his life with John's. Comparison's always a problem, biblically speaking. I mean, you can go all the way back to Genesis 20 or even possibly farther with Rachel, for example. Rachel had become jealous with Leah, right? I mean, Rachel had borne Jacob no children. She was emotional. She was frustrated. She was angry. She knew that the problem wasn't Jacob's because Leah had four sons, right? She knew that the problem was hers, that she was barren. She even screams out one time, give me children or I die, right? I mean, she's so upset. It seems extreme what she said, but she was speaking out of her frustration. And it all came from the fact that she was comparing herself to her sister, Leah. Right? She was seeing how the Lord was blessing Leah and not blessing her. And then this is how we get, always looking at how God is blessing others and not us. And then we happen to get jealous of them instead of sharing in their happiness, which is what Rachel should have been doing, was sharing in the happiness of Leah. But instead she was jealous, right? Rachel should have been rejoicing with those who rejoice. We read about it in Gospel of John, I mean, in chapter 3. Remember when John the Baptist and his disciples were baptizing people? And then Jesus and his disciples start baptizing people. And John the Baptist's disciples are like, hey, John, Jesus is baptizing people like we are, and everyone's going to him. Right? And they started getting jealous. They're like, all the crowds are going to Jesus. And so the controversy starts brewing. Jesus is baptizing more people than we are, right? We need to give out more free popcorn. Stop the presses. Remember John the Baptist, though, he had the right attitude toward it. When they bring that up to John the Baptist, he says, listen, a person cannot receive even one thing unless it's given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. The one who has the bride is the bridegroom. The friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly at the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is now complete. He must increase, but I must decrease. That's the correct attitude John the Baptist had. That's how he admonished his disciples when they came up, because they were comparing themselves to what was going on with Jesus. John understood the correct response. Yet for many, the axiom is true, which is comparison is the thief of joy. I often say that comparison is the death of joy. Because nothing kills your joy faster than when you start comparing yourself to other people. I've said it before that if all we do during the day is compare our Instagram glamour shots to someone else's Instagram glamour shots, we're always going to be dissatisfied, right? But Philippians 4:11 says, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. Contentment. Wherever we are, in whatever situation we're in, wherever the Lord has us, we have to learn to be content. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 8 say, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, we can take, and we cannot take anything out of the world, but if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. It's understanding to be content. In the Greek, the word for content just means to be satisfied, but in the future sense of that same Greek word, it can also mean to ward off or defend. What are you warding off? Are you defending yourself against? Well, discontentment, dissatisfaction, and comparison. Quit comparing yourselves to others, right? To defend against comparing our lives to someone else's lives. We need to defend ourselves against doing that. Right, someone will always have more money than you. Someone will always take more vacations than you. Someone will always seem to have the perfect life that you can't live up to in a worldly sense. Right, the grass will always be greener on the other side of the fence, no matter how much you water your lawn or seed it. It doesn't matter. Right, I've seeded my lawn like 3 or 4 times and it's dead. Always. I can never get it to go green. If I was trying to compare my life with my neighbor's, I'm toast. There's just nothing that you can do about it. And churches, they fall into this same trap. They fall into this same trap. We do the same thing. Look, that other church across the street's drawing huge crowds. Right? Over there at that church, we need to be like them. How can we outdo them? How can we get those crowds to come over here? Right? Maybe we need clowns and bouncy houses and, you know, more donuts or whatever it is. If you don't believe me that churches compete against each other, just pay attention at Easter time. And look at all the ads you get in the mail from all the large churches in the area and see what they write on there. See what they're like. We will have 1 million Easter eggs for your kids to find. And the next church, we will have 2 million Easter eggs for your church. I mean, they probably get the mailer from the other church and then just increase the number so that they'll have more. We'll have Easter eggs and the Easter bunny and free chocolate and we'll wash your car and we'll, you know, give you a gift card to Starbucks. But whatever they're trying to do, the whole thing is a game and it's ridiculous, but it's really noticeable at Easter. So pay attention when you get the things in your mailbox like I get. I have to roll my eyes every time I get it because they're not content with what they have or what the Lord's doing. They want, right? They got to play these games. Hebrews 13:5 tells us, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. What is it that makes them content in that verse? How are you content? You're content because Jesus is with you. And none of the other things matter. None of the other things matter. So it's about being content with Jesus. So when we talk, when people look at this passage and about what Peter is asking of Jesus after Jesus tells him to follow him, I can see possibly some of that. I can see the roots of maybe that discontentment in Peter that's causing him to say, well, why is John following us? Right? I mean, you said for me to follow you. Why is John following us? I think that's part of what's going on, but contextually, when we look at the context of the verse, we have to understand what Jesus and Peter are talking about. Because they aren't just talking about, don't you love me more, Jesus? You called me. Why is John? I know that he's the disciple whom you love. But, you know. But still, you said for me to follow you, and I'm following. Why is he tagging along? Right? Does he have to come? That's not really the conversation that's going on. Because remember what was just said. Jesus had just told Peter how he was going to die and how his death was going to glorify God. And then he says, Peter, follow me. And Peter turns around and sees John following them. And Peter says, well, what about him? What's Peter asking Jesus? Is John going to die too? That's what Peter's asking Jesus. He's saying, well, you just told me my death was going to glorify you. I turned around, John's following. Is John going to die too? Is his death going to glorify you, Lord? Is his death going to be more spectacular than mine? Maybe the comparison is coming in there, but they're speaking about life and death. That's what the context of what's being asked here. Peter is asking about John's death. I remember Peter, he died some 25 or 30 years before John even wrote this. And he died a death being hung upside down under the persecution of Nero. And when Jesus is describing Peter's death and he says that when you were young, you could dress yourself, you could go where you want, whatever. But when you're old, you're going to stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. That takes on a whole new meaning now that you understand that he's talking about Peter's death. Where is it that they're taking him that he doesn't want to go? To his death. That's where they're taking him. His crucifixion, basically. They crucified him upside down. And Jesus is saying, you're going to die a glorious death, Peter. It's going to be for the glory of God because of the ministry you have of bringing the gospel. And Peter looks behind, sees John, and says, well, what about him? What about John? I mean, if I'm going to follow you, I would die. What about John? Is he coming to die too? Please, Lord? Am I dying alone? Right? I mean, he's asking, what about John? And another, you know, like I said, another way to think of it is John going to die as well? And to which Jesus says, well, if it's my will that he remain, which means stay alive, what is that to you? What is that to you, Peter? If it's my will that John doesn't die, and yet he's following me, what is that to you, Peter? So in that sense, this is just about avoiding comparisons and distractions, right? About persevering, about just following Jesus and focusing on what Jesus has asked of you and not worrying about what Jesus has asked of others. It's not like you shouldn't be concerned about others and their lives and what they're going through. But as far as what God is doing through them and the work that God is doing in them, that's between them and God. Just like the work he's doing through you is between you and God. And if God wants you to do something with them, then that's great. You go do what God has asked you to do. But if God says, come follow me, it doesn't mean you're all going to be following him on the same path, right? He could walk a straight road, and then that road could branch out to 100 different roads, and Jesus will say, okay, you take that road, you take that road, you take that road, and none of you are on the same road. And you're like, wait a minute. What's going on with them? Are one of those roads better than the road I'm on? And Jesus is like, what does it matter? What does it matter? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just follow me. That's all that matters. Right? Peter made two mistakes. The first mistake that Peter made was looking back. And the second mistake he made was asking a stupid question. But that's Peter. He's really good at that. But looking back is the first problem he made. If Jesus had said, follow me, Peter, and Peter just got up and followed Jesus and never looked behind him, he would have never known John was following him. It wouldn't have been an issue. He would have never asked the question. Looking back is always a problem for all of us, right? It's always a problem for all of us. Like, much like Lot's wife, except Peter wasn't going to turn into a pillar of salt here. But he still got rebuked by Jesus. But we forget what Paul said in Philippians, which is forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, which means don't be looking in your rear view mirror all the time. That's behind you now. Just go and follow Jesus. Where he's taking you, right? Focus on what Jesus has asked of you Quit worrying about what Jesus has asked of others. That's not for you. That's not your mission. It's not your calling. Whether they live or whether they die is not up to you. Right? So in a sense, what this is Jesus' final rebuke of Peter. Right? Before Jesus ascends, he's just telling Peter, listen, don't meddle into the affairs of others. Right? What I've called the other disciples to do or the other apostles to do is between me and them. So don't take a detour. Don't drive off the road thinking about it. Just keep your eyes on me, Peter. Just keep your eyes on me and follow me, Peter. That's all I've asked you. That was the principle that Jesus was teaching Peter. Whatever my will is for others, what is that to you? You just follow me. Don't be distracted by them or what I'm doing in their life. You just follow me. And it's something to remember for all of us. Just follow Jesus. Be focused on what he is doing in your life, what he is doing through your life. Don't be distracted by what he's doing in the life of other believers, even other believers who are your close friends. You can't let that distract you from what the Lord has asked you to do, right? Whatever Jesus' will is for others, right? Jesus, I'm going to tell you the same thing. What is that to you, right? What is that to you? Just follow Jesus. So you shouldn't measure your walk with the Lord by comparison. If anything, if you're going to measure it at all, you should measure it by your faithfulness. Because that's how Jesus is going to measure it. To measure it by your faithfulness. So when Jesus asks you to do something, be faithful and just follow him and do it. Don't be like, well, let me see how I measure up with everyone else. Woohoo! Let's see how good I'm doing. Look how better I am than all those other guys. That's just going to distract you because it's just about you and Jesus. That's the whole story. That's what counts in life. It's the only thing that will matter in eternity. Was it you and Jesus? Did you pick up your cross and follow Jesus? Because basically that's what he's telling Peter to do. Pick up your cross and follow me. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 tells us this. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despised the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. It's just about you and Jesus. So just follow Jesus. Amen.